Morning, everybody. Hi, Nicole.
Good morning.
We get started as soon as our guest arrives. Okay, I just pinged him. Hopefully he'll be in on the top of the hour here. Thanks for coming, everyone. We'll get started shortly.
He's here.
What's that?
I was just letting you know that he was here.
He's here? Why don't I see him? Ah, there we are. Welcome, Jeff. How are you doing? Jeff, is your. Ah, there we
Hey,
go.
there you are. Sorry, it'd been a while since I'd been on Clubhouse and took getting so reacquainting myself. Hi, everyone.
Welcome. Thanks. Yeah, no worries at all. We're only 9:02 now, so this is perfect. Let's go ahead and get started. I just want to welcome our guest, Jeff Brown, who goes by the Bipolarist on, I think, mainly Twitter. Where are you mostly active, Jeff?
And just real quick, thank you, Monty, and everyone else, just for inviting me on the show. This is going to be fun for me. I've been very active, or more active, on Twitter and Twitter Spaces. And before that, I keep up a page on Facebook as well. I'm in a couple Facebook groups about bipolar disorder and neurodiversity. And then I
Awesome.
also, just this summer, I got sort of found my tribe in this peer recovery support specialist training that I did. And so I've been doing a lot offline, and I'm with the government here in Richmond in Virginia. So doing everything I can to learn more about the space, but I have a, like you said in the description.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. We're real grateful that you made the time to join our club for a panel discussion, and we'll be making a recording of this. The replays are on, and that way people can come back if they missed it to have a listen. So thanks again for being here. And why don't we start with the elephant in the room about you being pro-stigma. I'm very curious what you might mean by that.
So yeah, this is just a position I've just started taking recently. Is like we talk a lot about in the mental health space, and specifically with regard to serious mental illness, we talk about the stigma all the time and ending the stigma. And to be sure, I've experienced the stigma throughout my life, and I mean interpersonally, with actual medical and clinical professionals, in college, being encouraged to drop out by professors. Look, I'm familiar with the stigma. But I sort of realized something recently. It's like, we have a brand, like Bipolar has a brand. People recognize, that brand as for whatever they do, they know that a bipolar person is different than them. And when I watch all the conversation about inclusion and, diversity and equity, in companies that I've worked for and online, I just see a lot of, I'm not sure if I'm seeing enough progress for me to think that the stigma is going to go away. Perhaps the better way to address this is to own the brand and then start to rebrand it for ourselves and reshape what it means to be bipolar. So I'm taking that position to be pro-stigma and see if we can sort of bend it to our will.
This is like bipolar marketing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I set out to do with Bipolar, is to find a way to rebrand bipolar disorder as not, this unfortunate and pathetic or pitiful and dangerous and violent and whatever other thing people attribute to this word and this, medical condition that we get diagnosed with. I don't think that's all it is. There's a lot of conversation about the superpowers of autism, and ADHD, which is a feature of at least my experience with bipolar disorder when I'm hypomanic. I have a lot of issues with impulsivity and novelty seeking, and in organizations, always been a struggle. But I know that my brain and my identity is just as a person who's very nonlinear, and I know that could represent, that could show up in a brain scan as having other parts of my brain light up when I'm trying to focus instead of just my prefrontal cortex. So I get it, and I've seen that brain scan. I know what it means to manifest bipolar disorder in some materialistic representation. But in the real world, like the people that know me and the reason why I get to work in the places that I do are because I am, I benefit from, the madness as well as the brilliance. And I embrace the brilliance and the creativity wholeheartedly. And it really doesn't hurt people, or they get annoyed or a puff put to say this, but people think of me and talk about me as being, intelligent. And I don't like to brag about that. It's just, that's what I interpret myself to be. So I attribute a lot of those things to personality as well as being bipolar and being, we are, the de facto creative people on the planet. Like humanity has always looked to us for creativity. So if that means that I'm bipolar, then why should I be ashamed of it?
That is awesome. I really do connect with what you're saying there. I'm not the least bit embarrassed to describe myself as a person living with bipolar. It's the disorder word that I avoid. I don't consider it a disorder or.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, go on.
Yeah, I don't think that we should. I think about the experience of having this condition and feeling, depressed some days, or going through a manic bout or hypomania and feeling, up on myself and my confidence. I think about the episodic nature of this. Like, it's not just that I experience these things when sometimes I'm like worried of getting depressed, and I hate the winters. I live in Virginia, and the winters are always, they undermine my mood. Think about that. I think about taking the medicine every day, going to therapy and doing the work myself. But a lot of the condition isn't the medical diagnosis and the treatment of it. More of the condition for me, now that I'm stable and I have been, since my 20s, I'm 40 now, is the stigma that I encounter in the world. and the way that I'm treated differently, or the way that people respond to knowing that I have this diagnosis. So, you know, along with my interpretation of neurodiversity, it connected and infused with the understanding that there's a social model of disability as well. And I'm not necessarily disabled by this condition any longer. I've stabilized it, and I've embraced it and harnessed a lot of the, you know, the good parts, and understood how to offset the bad. But I still suffer from, you know, being disabled by society and the perspective and the brand and the, you know, the stigma. And that's not the condition. That's something else. So it's not inside of me. That disability is between me and society.
Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm really glad you're describing it that way. I'm going to open it up soon for hand raising and questions. I'm sure people want to join the discussion, but I just want to go backwards a little bit and just ask you some other things about your bio on the page that I pinned, because
yeah, sure.
It talks about your entrepreneurialism and you're an app developer, and tell us a bit about your own background.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in the Dulles Corridor, which we like to fancy the Silicon Valley of the East Coast. I got online very early, like in sixth or seventh grade. That was like 93 or so. And I've never really unplugged. So I have been, I grew up on online, so to speak. You know, I played a lot of sports leading up into this transition to becoming a hacker, so to speak, or like a security researcher, you know. In high school, I went to a magnet school for network administration, and, you know, I was confident I'd be able to go into IT. My parents encouraged me to go to college. At some point, I was banned from every computer in the school system for, you know, some behaviors that were, that I got blamed on. And I went to college, and in college, I turned 21, and I got, you know, I lost a cousin in September 11th, and had some family trauma, and I got really depressed. And so this sort of derailed my college and like professional career for like 4 or 5 years, figuring this condition out. You know, eventually I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder after a traumatic year and a half of, being misunderstood by my psychiatrist. And so the experience alone of that was, you know, being diagnosed was traumatic. And I think a lot of people share that experience. But eventually, you know, after traveling quite a bit in college just to accumulate credits abroad, I got back into my career. And I actually worked for my parents. They had a heating and air conditioning company for 42 years. And I helped them retire, helped them sell it. And so, you know, they cross-trained me in everything. And, you know, dispatching technicians, selling equipment, you know, just doing everything that you would imagine in a small business in a very tight and efficient operation. So I got to be sort of mini CEO, a mini CMO, mini CTO. And I went into my career after helping them sell that business to sell software and learn marketing and SEO and all those types of things. I built websites for people probably since the 90s. And I got into tech in a way that I could offer a consulting service. So soon after, I got poached to go build and co-found a nonprofit school to help train entrepreneurs. And I built a gap semester program for people that had dropped out of high school or college, autodidacts and DIY learners, people that are homeschooled, to take an alternative route. Instead of going to a four-year degree program, see if we could help them seek funding and build their idea and be in charge of their future and their income. So having learned what I did, working for my parents, we were able to raise $5 million for that idea and built a school in the cloud, a self-organized learning environment for people like that. Thereafter, that lasted about a year for me. It went on for another year thereafter. I needed to transition off because I was going commuting to North Carolina and living in Virginia. So I got the team started, and I left to get closer and closer and deeper into tech. Got into the agile world, worked at a web agency that supported large nonprofits and some of Obama's pet projects. I left that agency to start my own, primarily in WordPress and open source product development. Got into app prototyping, built a couple prototypes as well as production apps that help people sell their businesses or get funding. And then also transition from being an employee into a business owner. So I've done that a couple times. One of my products sort of blew up and got a lot of attention in the startup and growth hacking community and lean startup, and still is operational to today. So I'm proud of that one. It's called Press Farm. I built it and I exited from that product and got into product management at enterprises. And I don't know if this is what you're interested in, but I got into mobile app development, leading those teams as sort of like a quarterback or entrepreneur of like what we're going to do next and how we should go about this and what the plan is for learning as much as we can to build the best product that we can. And that's what I sort of specialized in. Now I've worked at Capital One, managing an app that had millions of users. I've pitched products to Capital One and other innovation groups, and for example, at Capital One Lab. In the natural language processing and chatbot space. I got the chance to run a rotation there. I'm also now a patented inventor. I came up with a number of inventions for them, three of which have been patented so far. And I continue to work with, as a consultant for companies that come approach me, or people, solopreneurs that come to me. Right now I'm working with one in the electric vehicle space, as well as a software automation tool. I get approached a lot to help people build a business, or help people build an app or a website. And so I sort of, that's how I'm known, I guess, in my circles now. That's what I do. Professional.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great story. I feel so happy you came here, because just personally, on a personal level, mm-hmm. my track background is quite similar. Like, you mentioned how it was a bit of a blow to get the diagnosis. It was for me as well. And yet there's other people who it's a relief for, because it's an explanation for past behavior and symptoms and things. But also, I mean, you look at my own LinkedIn, and I've got like this deep software background, and it was with big companies until 2000, 2001 timeframe, like Intel and Nortel Networks and stuff, working on cellular. And then the last 20 years have been all startups and tech support, and I was a Salesforce consultant, and it just feels like there's a lot of synergy and overlap in our two backgrounds. It's really cool to have you here. I'm gonna open up the floor for questions and turn on hand raising for anyone who wants to come up and ask Jeff a question. We'll start with Nicole. Sorry, Jeff, you want to say something else?
Yeah, I mean, looking at your LinkedIn, there is a lot of overlap. And it's interesting to hear you say that. I actually see that you're also in the healthcare consulting space. I recently worked at an insurance company, a Blue Cross Blue Shield company, building a telehealth platform, kind of like Talkspace, but for caregivers. So I learned a whole lot about the inside the beast, so to speak, about health insurance and how that world works and perceives people like us. So that was a very interesting exposure and foray into the belly of the beast, is what I say.
I have a feeling there's going to be collaborative opportunities for the two of us down the road here. But let's start with some questions. I think Nicole. He's on the phone. When he gets off, you go ahead with your question, Nicole. And thank you for being here, everyone. Nicole's helping me moderate the panel today. And when Jeff's off the phone, go ahead with your question. And in the meantime, I'll turn on the hand raising.
Okay. It doesn't show that he's on the phone for me, but is he still on?
Oh, I wouldn't miss this. I decline the call. Yeah, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to have you. I am like fascinated by, your view on the stigma. That's one of the issues that I have with, I don't want to say disorder now because Monty said don't use that word. But, just in dealing with like family and just trying to break that stigma in not being identified by, I have, by, you know, I am bipolar, you know, like it's just, it drives me, you know, nuts sometimes. So, I'm just curious, like you talked about like rebranding, being pro stigma, like how do we do that? Like, what does that look like in our day-to-day life? You know, because we're always trying to like, you know, as mental health advocates, like educate and look for opportunities to do that. But you know, obviously sometimes it falls on deaf ears and, you know, sometimes people just want to stay ignorant, which is fine, right? We all have a choice. But yeah, what does that look like in like regular everyday life and dealing with family, friends, employees, employers? I'm just curious what specifically do you do in your day to day to, you know, kind of support that belief, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. I think I caught most of it, Nicole. And yeah, I, you know, what you're sharing resonates with me as far as like the brand. I'm just like, I'm done, you know, I'm sick of it. And I don't want to give up our power. You know, like I said, like we have this brand. And I think it definitely has some reshaping and it deserves some attention. Yeah, sort of thing. So we've been given this power, and why give it up? So I've, you know, I put up this this website when I was earlier on this year. I was planning to get into specifically into like peer support, and I ran a trial run of that. I was able to rehabilitate a gent that worked at Capital One as well, who had struggled with this condition, and helped to motivate him to become an entrepreneur. So that was I don't to go through this program and build this program for people like me was like 10 years ago or 8 years before. And so now having read research about how there's a high prevalence of founders with ADHD and also with bipolar disorder, it just sort of seems to me like these are the people with the ideas. You know, we're the ones that are creative. So if that's the case, then why work for someone else or, you know, beg for the attempt or perhaps like the endorsement or support from a company with accommodations that really may not be as fit to provide them. At least in the United States here, we have laws that, you know, afford us accommodations should they be reasonable and so on. But in my experience, I haven't been able to secure those, at least not the ones that would help me the most. So, you know, all of that is to say that I think what we really need is more leaders and more CEO types and more founders to come out and say that the reason why they were able to come up with this idea is because they've always been known to be so creative. It's something that they appreciate about themselves. It's important about themselves. And if, you know, there happens to be this coincidence that, well, they were identified as being bipolar, it kind of fits, you know, like the research says that there's a high concentration of creatives with bipolar disorder. A lot of the same genes that are identified as being contributing to bipolar are correlated with intelligence. So why not just shift? And instead of thinking about, you know, worrying and fussing about the symptoms for which we have technology now, like we have medicine that works, you know, if it's the right medicine for you, and everyone's is different. But why worry about the symptoms any longer when we can stabilize those? You know, why not dive deeper into this condition or this experience by understanding the stories of the people that have survived and succeeded with it? I think that's really where we need to spend more time. So instead of ending the stigma, it's more like understanding the brand and then reshaping that brand to be something that's positive. So if you look at my website, bipolarist.com, you know, I came about this a certain way. I've gotten feedback since that I may be, like when you hear me talk about it, it doesn't resonate with what you see on the website. So I am now going to be transitioning into more of like a public speaking and even getting on stage in panels like this. Now I was invited by Vocals, an advocacy organization in Virginia, to go down to Richmond and speak at the General Assembly to our delegates and our senators about who are on this behavioral health commission. And you know, looking into how to improve the behavioral health system in Virginia. And that was a real privilege to be down there. I'm still involved with that organization, and I'm reaching out to our politicians here and learning more about how the government sees this, you know, quote unquote burden of bipolar disorder, or this illness and the condition and the disability, and maybe how we can sort of help them understand what it really is. Like, it's not a burden. You know, I see there's a paper about this. It's like the economic burden of bipolar disorder has been calculated to be like $200 billion on the U.S. economy. And I think about that, I'm like, well, perhaps there is a burden. And I wonder how much of that is due to the stigma not inside of the people that have this condition. A lot of times, I'm going on deep here, but stop me if you need to pump the brakes. But I think about there being an 80% unemployment rate of people with serious mental illness, state to state across America. And if the burden is due to us not being productive and the people that support us because we can't, quote unquote, then perhaps there must be a better way to get us employed. And I know from my experience that, you know, I have had a hard time working for other people. So maybe instead that's not what I'm supposed to do. And maybe instead that's what 80% of us aren't supposed to be doing either. So now I'm thinking, well, if we create some kind of like, you know, accelerator or fraternity, you know, or a funding mechanism and vehicle and like an incubator for people that are bipolar, who have this natural gift and talent of being creative, how can we give them the tools and the teams and the resources and services that they might need in order to, you know, operationalize and produce some of their ideas and bring them to market? So that's where I'm headed. How can we help the people that haven't been able to secure employment or sustain it for long term be inspired enough to, you know, chase one of their dreams and their passions and see if they can build something instead that can create value, not just to sustain themselves, but for our brand, you know, and sort of, you know, help people understand that the reason why they're doing this and effective is because we have this gift. So I hope to speak more on panels like this and on stage. I've been invited to give some keynotes or like to do some like brown bag lunches and keynote speeches and organizations and conferences. And I'm hoping to sort of pivot and just start to get on stage and talk about things like this. Maybe even become a sort of talking head on social media too. So that's my plan.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I think hopefully that answered your question, Nicole.
Yeah, it did. And I resonated with what you were saying so much because I have always been a self-starter. I have a bachelor's in entrepreneurial management and I've never worked like a 9-to-5 just never fit me. Mm-hmm. And it just was like, you know, and then being diagnosed and then going to all these doctors that say, oh, you're too smart to have bipolar disorder, or you're too this and you're too that. And it's like, I know I'm smart. It has nothing to do with, I mean, it does. I mean, that's probably why, right? Mm-hmm. Because I have this diagnosis. But, you know, they want to put you in a box and they want to shut you up and, you know, put you on the shelf and have you work within your, but I love the idea of empowering us, you know, creating leaders and encouraging that because, you know, a lot of us don't fit inside a box. Like, yeah, maybe we follow, you know, or fit textbook type symptoms at times, but we're so much more than that. So thank you so much for that. Okay. I appreciate it. And I support, you know, what you're doing. So keep up the good work.
No, thank you. Yeah. And please connect with me. Maybe there's an opportunity for us to partner on some of these ideas. I can't do them by myself. And I've been approached by some organizations that want to help. So it's like, perhaps, you know, I'm recruiting, you know, so to speak. And I'd love to have, you know, more people with entrepreneurial backgrounds help inform what we should build. Was there another question? Because
I wanted. Well, I, for one, personally, am definitely going to reconnect with you after this. I think there might be several things that we're doing. I mean, I'm running this bipolar support club. We do 8 hours of peer support per week in 4 2-hour sessions. And we also run the panel on Wednesday, and we also have academic discussions on Sunday. So we're all in on this, and our team is, you know, it's a professional team. We're getting paid for our work. We're not professionals. We're not medical professionals, but we're lived experience experts. And the discussions that we have every Tuesday and Thursday are wonderful, and they're amazing, and the club's growing, and we're adding rooms, and it's quite a good platform. So I'm looking forward to seeing ways that our club can collaborate with your initiatives and find some things that we can work on together. But that's for another day. In the meantime, let's go to another question. Robert's on the stage. How are you doing, Robert?
Good morning, Monty. Good morning, Nicole. Jeff, Jennifer, Kristen, everybody else in the room, David, Lizzie, you know. Welcome, Jeff. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, just your words.
I'm here now. I'm at a mystery question. I lost audio. Yeah.
I'm unplugging the headphones for this one. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
So yeah, no, your words in this room, and I'm so glad it's on a replay, because people are going to go back and listen to this and reach out to you specifically, Jeff. And, I'm working right now, and I was kind of podcasting this session in my cubicle. I do sales, by the way. And I've already connected with you on LinkedIn. So, I followed you, and then I also sent you a message. And I don't want to monopolize the room, but, you know, where are you from, Jeff? Sorry, I missed the beginning.
Yeah, no problem, Robert. Thank you for the ad. Please do reach out. Anyone, you know, add me or, you know, email me through the website, Bipolarist, or actually The Bipolarist on it's the website, it's the Facebook group of Bipolarist. So look me up, add me, and let's partner up. Robert, I live in Virginia, just near Washington, D.C., born and raised.
That's interesting. I'm located right now in Hayward, California, but I'm from the southern portion of the Bay Area, also known as Silicon Valley.
Is that right? Well, all right. We got some value.
That is right. You know what? I actually heard like 10 years ago that Virginia is booming. It was like a stock tip. Is that true?
You know, I read that too. And so it was about 20 years ago when I read, I was subscribing to all these magazines about tech, like Wired, and there was another one called NetGuide. And they were all talking about this idea of the Dulles Corridor. And I remember the other topics like the quantified self and like holographic storage, all these things are really coming to fruition now. I live in this town called Reston. We are at the end of the Silver Line of the metro here in DC. And if I go walk down the block, I've got Google's offices, Microsoft's, a little farther away in a couple miles. I've got a ton of defense contractors. Amazon has a lot of their data centers in an adjacent town called Ashburn. In Crystal City, close to DC, we also have Amazon's headquarters. So of FANG, you know, of the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, and Google, there isn't a Netflix. I think Netflix is the only one that isn't in the DC footprint. And most of them, I think, are also in Virginia. So Virginia is booming. Northern Virginia, you know, is where it's at. And we are very well incubated from some of the downturn that the rest of the world and the country experienced too, because of the government funding that goes into a lot of these companies. So a lot is concentrated here in Virginia. So if you're looking for careers in tech, you know, I wouldn't sleep on us.
Jeff, I have a question for you.
Go for it.
Well, it's more of a statement than a question, but I would love for you to get involved. So my idea is, as far as self-sustaining the bipolar community, you could use, you know, grants and, you know, nonprofit, nonprofits and such, and get money to, you know, fully sustain a bipolar community, which Monty is doing, which I applaud him for doing. And, you know, I believe that the Bipolar Support Club is, you know, legitimized, you know, Clubhouse and peer support virtually. So that's a huge thing. But I don't believe that, you know, there's a real profit, you know, in that sector of the bipolar community sector. I mean, you could make a profit.
Exactly.
But my idea, and, you know, I have several ideas, but, you know, the main point is creating a, you know, pretty much what you said, an incubator, an accelerator, or some type of organization that, you know, is profitable, and then not only fund the bipolar community, but, you know, put some money in our pockets.
I'd just like to interject for a second here. There's another guest coming on our panel in a couple of weeks, and his name is James Fellows, I believe. He's in the UK. And he has created a website. It's in the UK. It's called Bridges of Hope. And Bridges of Hope is basically it's a headhunting recruiting function specifically geared to people who have trouble with employment because of the stigma attached to their diagnosis. And he's been doing phenomenally well with that. So I'm excited to have him here and tell that story, because it's kind of in line with some of what you're talking about, Robert.
That sounds completely amazing. The only thing that I do kind of balk at, so to speak, is the ideas that, you know, our community comes up with. I want them to be our ideas and not owned by somebody else. For example, Kanye West is pretty much the face of bipolar, but that's another story. He designs a whole bunch of you know, clothing and footwear and all that, and more than that, but specifically he designed these slides, or you know, slippers or sandals or what have you, and he designed them while he was working for Adidas. So Adidas is using his designs and his technology and his innovation to create their own slides, Yeezy-esque slides, and gaining a profit from Kanye West's ideas. That's what I want to avoid. I want, you know, one of my ideas not in the hands of, you know, a conglomerate or a corporation. I want us to own the masters, so to speak. I want us to own our own fucking music.
That's exactly what I'm after. I've been looking at building an accelerator for some time after leaving Capital One and having given them some intellectual property as well. And realize, look, I have a ton of business I could build, right? This EV startup that I'm working with right now, it might as well be one of ours and under our portfolio. And there's a lot of funding available for quote unquote disabled, you know, entrepreneurs or business owners. There's a lot of ways that we can raise that money, but there's also a ton. So I think that in market now.
Hey Jeff, you're kind of cutting in and out.
Sorry.
And I really want to hear what you're saying. I apologize for interrupting you.
Let me see if I can get somewhere better. But please interject again if I do, or just cut me off in the chat.
Just in the interest of time, it's 22 and we got a few more people on stage, so we can circle back, Robert. Let's go to Jennifer. How you doing, Jennifer?
Hey, Jeff. Thank you for all the work that you do to end the stigma, or not end it, but break it, I guess. I was wondering, you seem to be like very positive about how people with bipolar, I don't know if this is the right word to say, but have a natural ability to become their own business owners, you know, entrepreneur. I'm on my fourth like work break from work. And it's been a rough year with my bipolar. And it's kind of like my part-time job because I am a photographer and I'm trying to get that business off the ground. And I have been for, 5 years now. And I want to know if you think it's like a natural ability or is it traits that bipolar people easily acquire to be successful in that? I mean, if that's the way you think we should move towards to gaining our confidence and our, you know, money situation back, you know, if that makes any sense. Do I make any sense?
No, I mean, I think you make a lot of sense. And I've had those experiences as well. Oops. Been trying to connect a headset that might be better for you guys to hear me, but please do tell me if I cut out. So, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I've had experiences like that where I have not been able to keep employment, or mostly because I haven't been able to get the support that I need for that reason. I've also had, I've had things pop up that have kept me from working consistently. But life happens and no one's body is perfect. So we do a lot, and it is a lot of a responsibility to manage this condition, minute to minute, hour to hour, meeting to meeting. It takes a lot to think about and introspect into like how I'm being perceived and like, am I on tilt or like, is it too much enthusiasm? Are people, getting overwhelmed? Am I like, even now am I talking too much? Am I talking too fast? And all those things, are factors for a lot of people with this condition because of, we also share the experience of being time blind during hypomania, with people that have ADHD. And that's a big challenge for me. I don't perceive time the same way as other people. And I think that's one of the ways that I've been successful as a futurist, like Kanye. He has seen what's been coming. He is fascinated with what comes next. I identify a lot with him. And when I think about him bringing in was like $2 billion for Adidas with the Yeezy brand and more for Gap and whoever else. I wonder if that was tabulated in this thing about us costing the U.S. economy $200 billion. Is it that, or are you not realizing that you're not taking, are they not taking into account all the value that we do create? And, think about all those people that talk about Kanye and write about Kanye. How much money is that buzz creating? People are making money on his back too, just like Robert said.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thanks.
Hi. For Lizzie, who asked in the chat, about the organization I was talking about, Jeff, I believe it's James Fellows who started it, and he's on my list of speakers. He's going to be coming in the next few weeks to talk about the company he created, this Bridge of Hope website, and just an amazing success story. And it's right in line with what we're all talking about here, how he had the innate ability to identify this opportunity and pursue it with a lot of success. So I think that's a great story to hear, and we'll have that in a couple of weeks. Let's go to Kristen and check in. How are you?
Hey, Monty. It's good to see you, so to speak. And Jeff, thanks for being here. This is a great topic, and I've already learned a lot. I have a marketing background as well, so it's real interesting to think about rebranding bipolar. And I was wondering, I've been applying for jobs. I've been out of the workforce since 2001. I've been a portrait photographer since then, entrepreneur doing my own thing. But the field got too competitive, and it's just doesn't seem worth it now that I'm older. I can't squat like I used to take pictures of children. So anyway, I've been applying for jobs, and sometimes they ask if you have a disability. And I was wondering, sometimes I just wonder if I should declare it or not, or just wait until I get to know them first. So that's my question is, what do you think about?
Two, I check that box all day. You know, I want them to know that I'm coming.
All day?
All day, every time. I check that box every single time. And I ask the questions to HR, like, is there anything else I need to sign or disclose or get certified to seek the accommodations that I need? And the reality is, in the United States, you don't have to help your medical condition to do that. But so checking the box for being disabled has, I don't think, disadvantaged me. The reason why they put that box there in the applications is because the federal government requires them to, and that data actually helps them. That helps them look good in their to the government that they're employing people across, you know, the spectrum of identities.
Right.
So I check the box, but I do make sure that I formally request accommodations. Because in most companies, they have to you have to get your medical practitioner, your physician, or whatever, to sign off or certify that you do have a condition that is disabling, and they may also require some sort of skills testing to see like how disabling it is and so on. So that is important. But yeah, does anyone else have that experience?
I told my employer right away about it, and I'm glad I did, because actually I tell her everything, you know, when I think a mood swing's occurring, like all the way to, like, I admitted to her I was hearing things, you know, because my bipolar got rough this year, and she was very kind, you know, very understanding, and only made her more empathetic to me. I mean, I know not everybody's like that, but if you don't tell them in the beginning, it could seem like you're dishonest in a way, maybe. I don't know. But I think you should always tell them.
Thank you. I agree. I agree completely. And if we don't talk about, like, those of us who are really, you know, stable and able and capable of employment, if we don't talk about it and we don't sort of claim the condition in that brand, then it's always going to be owned by people that don't understand it and usually don't experience it or have, you know, anyone close that they do have experience through. So I think that's why it's important that we check that box and we advocate for ourselves at school as well as in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Kristen. 15 minutes left. Robert, did you want to jump back in? Okay, I can't hear Robert if he's trying. Anyone in the audience with a question, it's your chance to come up and ask. I corrected the link. The first one I pinned about Bridge of Hope was the wrong one. But the career-related one that I've been thinking of that Jeff Fellows is going to be talking about, or James Fellows is going to be talking about in a few weeks, I've pinned it now properly to the top of the room so anyone can check that out. Robert, are you back? Okay. Anyone else on the stage have a further question?
He went back to work. Sorry, Monty. He put in the chat that he's back working. I think he came out for a break to participate.
Okay, I'll just move him down gently to the audience. Jeff, I guess we're reaching the end of today's talk. Thank you again so much. I'm definitely going to reach out to you one-on-one and explore some possibilities, because we're doing all kinds of things in the club. It's not just the clubhouse rooms that we're doing. We're starting a bunch of in real life meetups, and we're doing like motorcycle rides and meetups and stuff like that, and golf tournaments. And this is all for fundraising for Bipolar Support Club International. And so I'm starting with this in the US, like Washington State and Oregon and California. And then I'm going to be jumping around doing similar types of in real life meetup events at all the various places in the world where our membership lives and supports us. So Australia and Malaysia and lots of places in Europe. So yeah, I think you and I might have lots of potential opportunities to discuss, and I'd look forward to that.
I'm here for it. Anyone else, add me too. Let's get this done. I'd love to meet up in public and in real life, but just I'm ready. So cool. Put me in, coach.
Will do. Okay, Tina's come up to the stage. How you doing, Tina? Do you have a question?
No, I don't. I don't have a question at all. I haven't been listening for very long, but I just wanted to say hi. I'm British. I've lived overseas for, gosh, some time now, about 20 years, and I live in Germany the last 10 years. And I just wanted to say a huge thank you to you all, because I'm here as a bipolar two. I'm not going to use the word sufferer, but I have a diagnosis of that. I've had it for many, many, many years, and I'm on my own. And it's not easy, and I won't go into all of that, but I'm sitting here with my fire pit out on my own, in Germany. It's a beautiful evening, listening to you all, and I feel like you're sitting here with me, and that's a great feeling. So thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Yeah, this is great. I'm loving it, and I will continue to be plugged into more of these clubhouses, and anyone else, just invite me. I'm happy to contribute. So thank you, Tina, everyone else for listening.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Thanks, Tina. It's an honor, actually, to be part of these rooms where, you know, we all have differences in our specifics of our journeys, but we all also have quite a bit of similarities, especially things like the neurotypical people don't mostly get us. They try. But even caregivers sometimes are unable to put themselves in our shoes. And it's discussions like this and people like Jeff who help with that, not only getting people with similar lived experience together to exchange thoughts and ideas, but also to get the message out and do a better job of advocating. Because I even notice a lot of people are attempting advocacy, and I wish them all the success and power. But a lot of times it's like identifying the problems, and it's identifying the systems and the symptoms and the inability to cope with things and whatnot. And I mean, I am 100% on the same page as Jeff when he says that we're fortunate that this is treatable. And some things are tougher to treat than others, even inside bipolar, like mixed states and rapid cycling. And some of that stuff can be more challenging than my particular flavor of bipolar, which is type one with long cycles. And for me, and for people like me, it's completely treatable. It's completely manageable, and you can stabilize and stay between the rails. And that's when it gets good, because then you can do what Jeff is suggesting and leverage your strengths, your superpowers, if you want to call them that. And I think all of us have that opportunity. And so it's cool to be part of. I'm grateful for this room and for you being here, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Let's get it. Let's get it, guys. All right. Any other questions for me? I could keep going forever. So if anyone wants to linger around, just hit me up.
I don't have a question again, actually, but what is very empowering is to listen to the conversation from intelligent people. And that sounds a bit silly to say, but it's lovely that everyone is very coherent and is in talking with all these wonderful ideas. And it does feel very empowering to listen to. And I would love to get to that state of now if I can quote it correctly, being stable, able, and something else I think you said. And I would love a discussion about that. What does stable look like for people? That would be a very interesting conversation that I would love to be a part of.
Yeah, well, you come to the right place, Tina. The professionals call it euthymia when you're stable. We run here in the Bipolar Support Club. If you at the very top of the page above the title of the room where it says Bipolar Support Club, if you tap there, you'll get to our club page and you'll see our schedule for peer support rooms. And a lot of what we talk about is what you're asking about. You know, what is stability? How do we get there? How do we know when we're not there? What do people do to succeed in getting there? All that kind of stuff. It's the substance of our discussions four times a week. We have a 2-hour peer support session four times a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So please join us in those, because I think it'll be a place for some of your questions to get addressed.
Oh, you won't get rid of me now.
Good. Well, that's good. Okay, any other final closing comments before we say goodbye? I'd like to wrap things up now. Thanks, everyone in the audience, for listening in. Hope you got something out of it. And go ahead, Nicole.
Sorry, Lizzie was just asking about the meetups. I didn't know if you had any more information on that.
Just stay tuned to our Instagram. I'm creating a new channel. The meetups are going to be orchestrated outside of the club, but they're going to be raising money for the club. And so I will be posting about that soon. The first meetups are going to be in the Seattle area in December, in the first couple weeks of December. And then most of my West Coast US ones will follow in January. And then I'm going a little more international. So I'll get to other places in the U.S. I think Lizzie said she's in Arizona at some point, but not in the next half a year, because my agenda is pretty much settled. And by World Bipolar Day, I'll be with one of our teammates in Morocco for a meetup there. So we're Bipolar Support Club International. We have a lot of ground to cover worldwide, but I'll be back doing more events in the U.S. In the spring and summer. So, yeah, just stay tuned on that, Lizzie. Thanks for asking. Any other comments or questions before we close up? All right. Well, thanks again, 100%. You were amazing guest panelist here, Jeff, and down the road, maybe you'll come back and we'll talk about some more specific topic. And outside of this, we'll do some collaborating at some point.
Thank you all again for having me on the show, Monty. I would love to participate in. If anyone likes to reach out and you know where to find me, just look up Bipolarist pretty much anywhere you go.
Wonderful. Okay, I'm going to close it down. Thanks, everyone, for joining. We'll see you again next time. Have a great day.
Bye, everyone.